Welcome back to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Outlier Ventures' Jamie Burke. This is Technotopia.
In the next 60 seconds, you're going to learn how the Flatiron School can change your life. The Flatiron School will help teach you everything you need to get the job in code, data science, or design. But they'll also prepare you for the jobs that don't even exist yet. Because this is a school designed to educate you in the art of change. So if you're feeling stuck, bored, or unfulfilled, Flatiron will teach you how to change things. You'll learn by making things, breaking things, and discovering how the future is being built. The results speak for themselves. Go to flatironschool.com/podcast and read about our graduates' new careers, salary ranges, upcoming courses, and explore these exciting new careers. You can start building your own career in coding, data science, or digital design at one of Flatiron's local WeWork campuses, or you can take courses online. Go to flatironschool.com/podcast, read the reviews, and sign up for a free intro course. That's all we ask. Enrollment is now open. It's time to future-proof yourself and change things, fix things, make things better, starting with you. Flatironschool.com/podcast.
Welcome back to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Jamie Burke. He's CEO and founder of Outlier Ventures. Greetings, Jamie. Welcome to the show.
Hey there. Thanks, John.
So you're in Bulgaria. What are you doing in Bulgaria right now?
Yeah, rather randomly. So normally I'm in London, but...
You've Brexited?
I'm still holding on to the fact that that's not a real thing.
Okay, good.
So we'll see. So no, I'm kind of just starting to... This year I made a kind of commitment to myself, really, and I guess that the ecosystem that I would try to explore and connect up to ecosystems that are outside of the usual places in my world, the blockchain world. So, mm-hmm. London, Zurich or Berlin, and try to kind of go to places slightly off the beaten track. So I've been invited to about 10 different cities to do some meetups and what have you. And the first one is here in Sofia in Bulgaria.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What made you think that, or what made you think to expand outside of those spaces?
Because I was being approached a lot by dev shops, startups that I hadn't heard of before that were kind of coming through our due diligence team. And there started to appear to be kind of new clustering, so developer communities that are already fairly developed anyway in Eastern Europe and Baltic states, but that seem to be doing a lot more work in the blockchain and crypto space. And so part out of being intrigued to see how mature these ecosystems were, and then also at Outlier we try to kind of work hard to find opportunities ahead of the pack, so we can kind of work with them early stage. So so here I am.
I mean, it seems like a lot of the ICO hype came out of some of the Balkans, some of Central Europe, some Eastern Europe. Is there a lot of that still floating around, or has it died down a little bit?
It seems to have died down a bit, but I guess these kind of places have quite a history of well-established technical universities, pretty deep upper ecosystems, and then because of the Soviet era, well-developed kind of communities around cryptography and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So I think it's natural that crypto has a fairly big presence in these regions. But yeah, certainly at the kind of height of the whole ICO mania, there did seem to be a lot coming out of certainly Eastern Europe and Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the story was that Bulgaria had some of the earliest computers and they actually built some of the first viruses as well. I remember that distinctly back in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about what you're looking for in terms of investing in the future of blockchain. A lot of people are saying that blockchain is the crypto winter is going to be permanent, et cetera, et cetera. What's your take on that right now?
Yeah, so we've been investing in the space for just under 5 years. So we were Europe's first dedicated blockchain fund. So we've ridden that whole journey and a couple of cycles within it. And we kind of remain convinced and committed to the fact that distributed ledger technology and digital assets underpinned by cryptography are foundational to the next phase of the web. That hasn't changed. And, you know, in the build up to the whole ICO mania of 2017, we continuously warned or cautioned that many of the use cases that were being pushed simply didn't have the infrastructure to enable them. And so I think it's kind of classic Gartner hype cycle that the hype overtook the tech. I think the difference in this space was, you know, when the innovation is the ability effectively to issue digital assets, plus, you know, digital money, then I guess that exaggerates and distorts that hype cycle, because, you know, if the innovation is money itself, or at least, you know, new forms of digital asset, which is currency or what have you, then that's going to attract much more capital and much more hype. So, you know, we kind of continued to invest in our thesis, which was primarily infrastructure. Throughout that, we didn't get caught up in the ICO mania. Many of the ICOs that happened, we just didn't participate in. And most of the things that we invested in did not ICO in 2017 or 18, but raised privately tens of millions to build out the technology, and only now just kind of launching their networks. And Fetch is a good example of that, the second one to go out of Binance Launchpad this year, with a, you know, pretty mature technology stack, team of 30, 40 people already, machine learning experts, and what have you. So we've kind of just continued to do what we do. We've always maintained the discipline of venture, but, you know, slightly tweaked for investing into tokenized networks. And then behind that, I guess the thing that's allowed that consistency in how we engage and invest in the space is we have a very strong thesis, which of course evolves, but the thing that was always interesting to us was to invest in open source, primarily unpermissioned tokenized networks, and where there was the intersection between DLT and things like IoT, machine learning. So where DLT and crypto assets could be applied to the machine-to-machine economy, or, you know, kind of the AI or digital agent space.
Why is this technology foundational? I think a lot of people are still asking that question. What does the future of this technology look like in 10 years?
Yeah, well, again, we have a slightly different take to most people. So I think most people, when they think about cryptocurrency and blockchains, they think that it is about people knowingly adopting new digital currencies or a new digital money. And actually, that's probably the hardest thing to happen, has the most friction points, and I believe will only be a small portion of where most of the value that's going to be flowing through these ledgers comes from. So if you, and you'll be well aware of this, I'm sure most of your audience will, but there are now more devices connected to the internet than people. 50% of all web traffic is from bots, and half of that is from malicious bots. So when you think about the internet population, people are shrinking part of it. You've got a growing amount of machines wanting to communicate with other machines. We're moving from, you know, kind of these very crude bots, which are just an annoying kind of conversational user interface, to increasingly digital representatives that will have economic agency. and will carry out economic activity on our behalf. And so the value that's going to flow between machines, between digital representatives, is going to be invisible to most people, but is going to be the kind of main economic payload that these ledgers are going to have to enable. So for us, what's most exciting about this technology is that for the first time ever, we have an economic layer that is native to the web. So, of course, mm-hmm. a lot of people say that Bitcoin is the first money that's native to the web. But because that was open source and we now have this toolkit where anybody anywhere in the world can create a ledger, can issue a digital asset, and can program rules into that asset and ledger, it means all of a sudden we have an infrastructure that can enable an economic layer that's native to the web and that can handle very low value, sometimes kind of transactions that have no to little value. Mm-hmm. It's just data being passed between IoT devices. Previously there was no way that could be carried out unless you relied upon a centralized party. And of course, especially in the context of IoT, that made it hugely vulnerable. And so you think about the internet outage that happened on the East Coast, I think it was of the US a few years back, mm-hmm. that was primarily because this IoT value chain is so insecure. So with this kind of new infrastructure, we can enable a decentralized, automated, and increasingly autonomous marketplaces where devices, people, but digital representatives can transact at a very high throughput.
So I think we've discussed this before on the show, the idea that the technology isn't the key here. The real key is actually the cryptocurrency isn't the key here. The real key is the technology behind the scenes, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we think there will be thousands, tens of thousands of crypto assets, but we don't think that they will be used as currencies by people. So the focus of tokenization for us is the idea that through tokenization, you can add incentives and disincentives to these ledgers, mm-hmm. In order that you can apply game theory to make them function in an orderly way. So that is the power of tokenization. And we do a lot of token design with the projects that we invest in and advise. And the purpose of token design is to be able to optimize a network for a particular objective function. And that objective function should be as simple as possible. It should, mm-hmm. You should be able to express it in a mathematical equation in order that you can validate it, you can test it, and you can optimize it. And therefore, a token can't be complex. It has to be incredibly simple. And I think if you look at a lot of the generation one ledgers, they ended up with a one token system that was supposed to work for hundreds of different use cases. Now what's starting to happen is people are creating tokenized systems to optimize for a very particular thing. And now we've got a lot more focus on interoperability. Mm-hmm. What we're going to have is kind of a universe of ledgers with tokens that are optimizing for very particular things that will need to have data interoperability and value interoperability. But each are kind of optimizing for a particular thing, a particular inefficiency or a particular gain. Now, if you think about the benefit of these systems or these games being played by digital representatives or machines, mm-hmm. that they are inherently, or at least you would assume, more logical than people. So the messy thing about economics and why most kind of projections that are pushed out by economists are wrong is because people are messy, irrational, and they presuppose rationality. Whilst if you're talking about designing for a system that incentivizes and disincentivizes machines mm-hmm. to behave a certain way, then the thinking goes that they will be more logical, and therefore these systems can become more orderly. And so a lot of that optimization is going to be done behind the scenes by machines, by digital representatives, and they will kind of orchestrate our world. But as an end user, I will be no more aware of these protocols than I am of SMTP or HTTP.
Sure. So, I mean, it feels so there's two points I wanted to hit on. It sounds like the vision that you guys are supporting is the idea of sort of a serverless model where ledgers sort of sit in a vacuum. They have no input. They have inputs and outputs, but there's very little other connection with other devices. And I think secondly, you're basically saying that even though humans aren't rational, the systems that we're going to be creating are going to rationalize for us and give us the best advice for the situation at hand. Is that something that's coming through?
If we design them well enough, and so, you know, we can also. It's important that we're not too utopic about this. So, you know, designing for a tokenized network is orders of magnitude more complex than, you know, designing a startup
mm-hmm.
because on the one hand, it needs to potentially serve startups or enterprise or consumer markets. But it is A, an open source system. It is B, an economy, and with all the complexities that go with any economy. And, you know, you are ultimately having to have this thing optimized. You're going to have to, you know, build in some assumptions into it, and you're going to have to make sure it's not too fragile. And so, again, if you look at a lot of the kind of generation one protocols, they hard coded a lot of assumptions into the network mm-hmm. and then tried to push for an extreme form of decentralization day one. And what happened was that they made very brittle, fragile systems because, a lot of those assumptions are going to be wrong. And they, unlike a lean startup, which can kind of validate, test, and evolve, they were kind of these very brittle, rigid digital economies. And often mm-hmm. they broke, or there was going to be a fork and everything else. So, you know, you think about the different competencies that you need to be able to design for these things. So you have to have people that can think through systems, systems thinking, engineering, because you need these systems to be safe, as safe as a physical bridge, for example, in terms of the kind of math that underpins it, given the economic payload that it's going to have to handle. You know, you need cryptographers, you need game theorists, behavioral economists. There's a mixture of different competencies that have to be combined mm-hmm. in order for you to stand a chance of both designing for and then kind of governing these systems. So it draws from so many different disciplines, and there's lots of really interesting work. I mean, we have a kind of a mini universe of that Outlier, but of course no one organization can have all of that under one roof. There's a number of token engineering meetups that go on around the world. We host the London chapter and the Toronto chapter, mm-hmm. which bring these kind of different people together to think about how we can design for these systems. But, you know, as we know from just looking at high frequency trading in capital markets as it is today, you know, the assumption that these algorithms are going to be rational doesn't always play out. You know, you mm-hmm. get these flash crashes where they kind of just compound each other's errors. Or we definitely can't be we can't think that just because machines should be more logical that en masse they're necessarily going to be.
Mm-hmm. What does the space need right now? What is it missing?
Well, to be honest with you, I'd say what it needed was a crypto winter.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I did a post the beginning part of 2018, which pretty much said, you know, we need a crypto winter. We need to take a lot of the heat out of the market. We need to get back to fundamentals, to focusing on building out infrastructure, to take a more kind of classic venture approach to how projects are given money and, you know, how they unlock money by actually delivering stuff and, you know, founders kind of rewards vest are based against success metrics. So we're starting to kind of get much more discipline coming back to the market. And of course, you know, the people that really care about the technology and its potential are still here and they're busily building and they're able to raise capital, just, you know, albeit not necessarily through a massive ICO, but sometimes in equity almost as a bridge to get them towards a tokenized network. So on the whole, I'm really happy with the direction that the space is taking. There's less dogmatism now. There's much more pragmatism about decentralization as a spectrum rather than the binary, you know, you're decentralized or you're centralized.
Mm-hmm.
So people being much more pragmatic about the decisions that they're making to allow for this scalability. There's much more focus on interoperability, which shows an acceptance that there will be multiple ledgers rather than the kind of dogma that there would be one or two to rule them all.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, on the whole, it's going in the right direction. The kind of next phase that we're in is an industry crossing the chasm. So if you look at blockchain and crypto in the context of the diffusion of innovation, you know, we're at the stage where it was primarily being driven and adopted by the innovators themselves, of course, with a lot of speculation around it. And now we're at the point whereby there is a lot of enterprise interest, certainly in the use cases that we're interested in. So outside of just this kind of narrow financial services realm, you know, looking at applicability into the machine-to-machine economy, smart cities, transportation, mobility, these kind of areas.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more traction and pickup from enterprise, but you know they're still waiting for a usable technology stack. And so what we've got to try to do is wrap around the technologists, the people that are solving really hard technical problems. They now need kind of commercial entities wrapped around them.
Mm-hmm.
In order that there is an entity that can engage with enterprise and can go through the boring part of a sales cycle or integration and process mapping. And so, you know, we need kind of a whole industry of integrators and kind of enterprise consulting firms to kind of grow around this nascent technology stack.
All right, very cool. Jamie, how can folks get in touch with you if they need cash? You're going to send them some checks?
Yeah, well, they can tweet me at Jamie247. They can go to our website, which is outlierventures.io, and there's a million different touch points, LinkedIn as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, excellent. Jamie Burke, CEO, founder, Outlier Ventures. This has been Technotopia. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, John.
This has been Technotopia. We will see you next week.
By Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com.
Tectotopia is also sponsored by CheapTranscription.io. CheapTranscription offers 10 cent per minute transcriptions using our happy robots, or 85 cents per minute using our human assistants. CheapTranscription.io is cheaper and faster than everyone else. CheapTranscription.io.